All right, so are you ready for this one, Roland?
I am.
All right, so here's the story. So we woke up one day and we saw in our bank account, it shows like negative $888,888, all eights across the board.
That's
and
not
it's
really
red.
That good. That's got to be a bad morning to wake.
That was bad. I'm like, whoa, we just got hacked. So we go to the bank and come to find out it's our partner, basically, because we were not structured correctly and not savvy, he set up the bank accounts. And so technically, he had every right to move a percentage of funds into another account.
You're listening to Business Lunch with Roland Frazier. This is your seat at the table. Welcome to the show. Today, Roland is having a business lunch with Dustin Matthews. Now, you may have actually read one of his columns in Entrepreneur magazine. Dustin is a speaker, author, and chief education officer at WealthFit. Today, it's a great episode, so let's get right into it.
Hey, this is Roland Frazier with Business Lunch, and I'm here today with my special guest, Dustin Matthews. Dustin, welcome to the show.
Roland, I'm excited to be here.
So I'd love to chat about, you've got a pretty diverse background, which is kind of fun,
yeah.
as all crazy entrepreneurs tend to have, right?
Yeah.
You have done a lot of cool things. You started out working in real estate with, was it foreclosures.com?
Foreclosures Daily, yeah.
Foreclosures Daily.
Yeah.
Cool. So take us back to what you were doing with Foreclosures Daily.
So out of school, I had nothing going on. And so my girlfriend at the time, former girlfriend now, she handed me Rich Dad Poor Dad, and I got excited about it because I came so fascinated with this message. I read like all the ones in the series. And so I'm like, I need to go and put myself in the environment. So I go into a real estate investor club, and I was scared out of my mind because it was like the New York Stock Exchange, or at least what I think happens at the New York Stock Exchange. People were yelling these weird terms, like, I got a 3-2 block with this and this part of the city. I'm like,
this is like
whoa.
Deal pitching or something.
Yeah,
they were
talking pitches there, like, here are the properties we have.
Right.
So I retreated out to the vendor, the sponsorship area, and everyone there wanted to talk to me, right?
Because they wanted selling to sell. Stuff.
Yeah. So that's where I found the owners of this company, two companies. And I pitched them. I said, listen, I'm fresh out of school. I just want to learn. Here's the skill set that I have. I want to intern. I want to apprentice.
Yeah.
And so one lady, I remember, she put a contract in front of my face. You could tell she had been burned before.
Wow.
And so I'm like, I retreat.
Yeah.
And then I go to this other guy that's there, and he's this happy-go-lucky. He doesn't know how to turn on a computer. And so he needs like a sidekick.
Right.
And so he takes me under his wing. I help him. And that's how the journey started. So I think the big lesson for people is put yourself in the environment.
Yeah. I like that a lot. And then you ended up booking hundreds of events a year?
We did a couple hundred events a year. Yep. We did Inc. 500. Our best year was 14 million, just doing live events. At first, it started off just subscription revenue, which I've come to embrace again.
Yep.
And then we got lured into selling, you know, $9,000 seminars and going after like big one-time hits.
Yeah.
And that eventually is what led to the downfall, was being so reliant on that when the credit markets freezed up, we could no longer sell that.
Right. So then what? What happened to that business that caused you to leave? And then what? Where did you go?
I'd like to say I forecasted the market and knew that things were going to get bad, but that wasn't the case. I just was in that environment, Roland, for so long, and I was an employee. And I saw all these real estate gurus coming in and saying, you can be rich. And I knew that real estate wasn't going to be my thing, but I had developed some marketing stuff. So I'm like, I got to go do something.
You found you were passionate more about marketing.
Yes,
exactly.
Than real estate. Yeah. It was marketing. It's like, man, we can put words on paper into a microphone on a stage, however the media is, and we can get people to do stuff. And I'd never taken a class like that. I never knew about psychology or copywriting. And so when I found that out, like, we can do that, it was powerful. And I'm like, I can go into any industry. And so that's where I invested my time. So I jump ship and I go into a mastermind. And at that mastermind is that business credit guru. And then I said, I just started applying my marketing stuff in relationships that I had made. And one of those relationships is why we're here today from back in the day.
That's really cool. So then you did the credit thing. That was the first real entrepreneurial adventure?
Yeah. I mean, if you don't count, like, in college, I was doing eBay. My mom always grew up doing some side hustle stuff, as it's called now.
Yeah.
But eBay, I'm big into tennis. So I would sell like my tennis supplies and I would trade up and things around the house. And I remember the MP3s, the Rio MP3 player from back in the day. So I would do that. But my first real thing was business credit, creating an info product and then being the guy on the circuit going and speaking at real estate events because I made all these connections, and I would sell this info product, Business Credit Infusion.
Nice. And how long did you do that?
I think I did that for about 3 years. Right at the tail end of that, product launches were becoming all the vogue in the real estate space and in the internet marketing space. And so that started to get my attention when the credit, you know, restrictions got tighter and there was all these nuances in business credit. I was simply the marketer in the face. I didn't know all the technical. I said, man, I have to get out. And so that's when I, you know, started Speaking Empire and, and product launches.
So the business credit was your first one. And now—
And then product launches.
You're moving into product launches and then Speaking Empire. Yep. What caused the transitions and what did you see? What did you learn? What were the takeaways?
You know, this field, it's kind of tricky if you don't do things the right way. So I saw people falling around me and going to jail. And I said, man, this is probably not the right place to be in, even though I believe I was doing things great.
Right.
So I got into product launches.
So more of just a risk. You saw an increase in risk and said, not really.
Yeah, not for me. I'm too young. I'll get eaten up. so I get out and I do these product launches and I just get referral business. I just follow the flow, as you say. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of got passed along, if you will, from one launch to another.
Was that what you wanted to do? Or was that kind of a, like, I'm not sure, I'm kind of in a state of transition?
It wasn't my big thing. It was just kind of a interim thing, but it wasn't my big thing.
Right.
And so along the way, we put on a seminar called the Speaker Makeover.
Okay.
And we got 91 real estate gurus in a room in Tampa because my former partner was a whiz on the stage and he could sell, you know, ice to Eskimos. And I was doing these product launches, which was the vogue back in the day. And so like we were sort of seen as golden boys, if you will, or at least we had the attention of the market.
Yep.
And so we cobbled 91 real estate gurus in a room and get this rolling. We know we need to make an offer. We had all this experience from Foreclosures Daily doing seminars, but yet we didn't write a presentation. We just were like, this is what we're going to do. We'll get it. We'll figure it out. So I remember I flew back from a product launch and it's the third day. We need to sell something. This isn't choreographed. We know better.
Right.
But I was doing other stuff. You know, my other partner was doing other stuff. And so it ends up happening that I'm going to be the final speaker, yet I am nervous. Uh-huh. I am not the trained assassin or closer from the stage.
Right.
I was going to have to give the presentation and do the close to a room full of speakers that do this for a living. It made no sense.
No,
it's
pressure.
Like, it's like having your star running back like healthy, but he's on the bench.
But it also could be cool because they're all used to what your partner would do.
Yeah.
They were not used to what you were going to do. So you're only going to come across as authentic, which turns out 10 years down the road now to be the best way to be.
I know. It's so true. And you are spot on. Despite all of that craziness, we eke out one sale, but this sale is for $25,000. It's a year-long coaching program, and that would start what would become Speaking Empire. Yeah, it was one heck of a ride.
So you just kind of fell into you decided to do this thing for speakers, and then you're like, hey, that was fun.
Yeah, let's do it again.
Let's do this Speaking Empire business.
Yep.
And did you have two other partners?
It was me and one other, and then we're like, we need someone like— because I was marketing, he was sales. Like, we need someone, like, we're missing an arm
that
here.
That makes stuff go.
Yeah. And so we picked up another partner, which wasn't necessarily the right fit for what we were looking for, but now there were three. And so along the way, bumps and bruises, one of the partners determined, like, this wasn't the path they wanted to go. So that's an interesting story, hard knocks of figuring out how to get a partner out of a business, and taught me a lot.
And then you picked up another one, right?
We did. So we, after a while, this was, we were getting savvier in my age. And so we determined that this person could earn in equity into the deal. And so we ended up picking up a third partner.
How do you work in earn in? Because that I think would be good for people to hear.
Well, I feel awkward because you're the guy that's,
I want to hear, because you've got the experience in this particular deal, and I think your perspective would be super valuable.
All right. So this is what's interesting. So this person that earned in was a former partner at Foreclosures Daily. So we knew that she wanted an opportunity to sit at the table and not just have a job. And so when we hired our first employee, this was her. And so when our former partner left, we said, listen, there's an opportunity. Obviously, we're inheriting, you know, all these shares. We want to give you the opportunity because you're great and stick around. And so we put her on a 3-year plan. If we had hit certain benchmarks, we would give her 5%, and then one a year, we would do 1%. So the max we would give up is 10%. So she had the ability to earn up to 10%.
And did she have to pay for that?
She did not.
Were there any tax consequences to her as a result of that?
Probably, but you'd have to ask her because I don't remember.
All right, because there are. That's one thing about earn-ins when you're getting free equity as opposed to options.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the deal with people who, and it's me interviewing you, but I can't help but say
absolutely.
This. Right?
Absolutely.
Right? So with people who receive equity for free, they're going to be taxed on the value of the equity that they're receiving mm-hmm. for free. They have a zero basis in it. They're realizing at that time.
Yeah.
And in a company like yours or like a lot of private companies,
yeah.
it doesn't really matter because they can get the same benefit through either what we call phantom equity mm-hmm. or a profits-only interest or something like that.
Yeah.
So that they have an option effectively to exercise and buy in at whatever the price is. And it might be a dollar, right? It
yeah.
might be 10 cents. And then when they do that, they're taxed on the difference between their interest in the company at that time minus what they're paying for it. So,
gotcha.
So it kind of makes sense when you're doing any kind of equity deal to do an option, a profits-only interest, something that won't result in taxes
yeah.
as a result of receiving it because she would still have the ability to receive profits.
Yeah.
She'd still have the ability to vote. And if the company sells, she still gets her percentage of the sale. It's just that you don't pay in the meantime.
I wish I had you on my team back in the day.
So that's an earn-in. And how did that work, that overall relationship?
It worked great. She really was the glue that we needed. We were the troublemakers and the, you know, rainmakers. And so she held us and the company accountable and really helped us grow. She was that partner that we needed. And
yeah.
it worked well because she was there till the end, even past me when I left. She was still there and you know, still growing and figuring out how to better herself.
So why would you choose a partner on that as opposed to hiring somebody for people that are thinking about this?
I think at the time, if I remember correctly, we didn't have a lot of funds. I mean, I guess we paid her salary for sure. We wanted her to stick around.
Sure.
We wanted someone that just wouldn't come 9 to 5. We wanted someone vested. We felt like we needed that. And this was our way to do it. Probably not the best way, you know, just to randomly give out equity. And not randomly, because we knew her backstory.
Yeah. Well, it's good. I mean, you have buy-in, right? I mean, you
yeah.
literally have, you have earn-in, I guess, in this case. But
yeah.
But you've got somebody who has an interest beyond just a job.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about getting out of the other partnership? How did you see that things were maybe not going to be what you thought they were? What did you expect versus what you got, and what was the takeaway?
All right. So are you ready for this one, Roland?
I am.
All right. So here's the story. So we woke up one day and we saw in our bank account, Bank of America. This is I don't know if this is like a thing they disclose, but we wake up and it shows like negative $888,888, all eights across the board.
That's
and
not
it's
really
red.
That good. That's got to be a bad morning to wake up.
That was bad. I'm like, whoa, we just got hacked, or like Bank of America. Like, so we go to the bank and come to find out it's our partner, basically, because we were not structured correctly and not savvy, he set up the bank accounts. And so technically, he had every right to move a percentage of funds into another account. And so what had happened was Bank of America had deemed that fraud when we had called and said, listen, our money is missing.
You called after you saw the negative 800 and some thousand.
We saw money disappear. Call okay. Bank of America. Hey, this is what's going on. Where's our money? Well, we saw the other account. There was money in there. Who did that? So we call them, put them on notice. And that's when they say, this is a fraudulent, or this is an account on notice.
Okay.
And so basically, he had every right to move the money out after we called them. That's what the bank said.
Every right with the bank to do it, not necessarily
with, yes,
in your partnership.
With the right, yes, right. With the bank. You're absolutely right about that. And so essentially that was our notice of like, hey, I want out of the business. Not like, hey.
I took your money.
Yeah.
Well, how about the 888,000? Because that
was just Bank of America's internal system to
that
let.
That was like a code.
Yeah. So a teller could see that.
That's
or
a crazy code to like for you to log in online. And
yes. And we were like, oh my goodness. So that puts everyone on alert that's familiar
Got
with it. And that obviously gets you to call the business owner.
It probably does get a lot of calls quick.
Yeah.
So did you see this coming?
Yes and no.
Okay.
Yes, we saw it coming because we felt this person wasn't motivated in the business.
Okay.
Like they weren't productive. They were kind of like the there's always that classic cartoon of like the wheel and someone is like the wheelbarrow and someone is like putting their foot on the ground and not pushing in the same direction, but they're like slowing you down. That's what I remember from that time in my life. They just became like disinterested in the business. We were just so focused on sales and revenue. Like we just let it slide. Maybe he's having trouble at home and we didn't confront it. So that was on us. And so yes, thinking back now we saw, but at the time, no.
Okay. That's cool. And so then now you are, for the first time ever, on notice, you call him and say, hey, you know, money gone. And,
yeah.
And he said,
this facts behind it is he took a third. So he valued the, we all had a third ownership in it. So he's like, I'm just going to take a third of what's in the bank account. Well, you know, you can't just do that. There's liabilities.
No
yeah. There's like liabilities. Like you can't just take a third. Like, so, but he could by the bank's standard because he was a signer on the account and we were not.
Right.
Foolish us. And so we just sat down. It was very combative. And so we went to a third party and we ended up settling. And that number came way down from his third, but more than, you know, we wanted to.
Yeah.
To pay.
And that didn't sour you on partnerships though, because you went right into another one, right? What was your takeaway on that?
The takeaway for me was doing things better, being savvier and smarter. And again, Roland, I wish I would have said, like, I wish I had studied up law at that time, but I was so focused on marketing and wrapped in my own ego and trying to drive the business.
I think most people are though. And so to me, it's good for people who are listening to hear who are in partnerships or thinking about partnerships.
Yeah.
So what would you do differently now that you had that experience?
Go to an attorney, consult one, or just read up yourself. I mean, definitely should go to an attorney on stuff like that, especially if you're in this for the long haul, set a solid foundation. So one, read up myself so I can actually talk to an attorney so I know I'm getting like good, you know, direct, I'm giving good direction and getting what's needed.
Well, for the people who are not yet ready, that's a nice way of saying too cheap to go to an attorney. were there any, like you said, oh, well, next time I would do this. And this, not general like going to an attorney, but specifically because this happened, I see one of the things we didn't do was anything like that.
Just get clarity. You know, one of the things we should have sat down at the table and said, like, what's most important to you? Where do you want to go? What's your vision for this? Do you want to exit in 3 to 5 years? Where do you think you're headed in it? And so getting that clear, we were more excited about the start and making that sale.
Yeah.
We were already looking past that, but we didn't set the vision at the get-go and get clarity. So I would have sat down with the partners. And looking back now, I know we're all excited to create, a lot of us are excited to create, slowing down and taking the time, especially if you're going into business together, slow playing it has been a big lesson for me lately to make sure everyone's on the same page.
So you had the opportunity when you decided to exit that business
to
potentially buy it.
Mm-hmm.
So you decided not to because obviously you've gone into this now.
Yeah.
How did that work and what were you thinking as you went through that and what advice would you give other folks?
This was tricky because this was 9 years. So I co-founded this.
Right.
I was a co-founder. And so woke up one day after 9 years saying, I don't want to be on this path in a year. Like
right.
I was stagnant. And so I had some decisions to make. Am I going to buy the other partners out? And I called you and you gave me some advice and made me realize like, that's probably not the thing to do. And which was totally the right call because I was stagnant and that business was a trap to me essentially. And so what I did was got some advice. I reached out to people and negotiated my own way out, which was interesting because we had picked up a client and they were an attorney and an advisor to the company. And so a lot of times I had worked with him to do deals and structure things. And in fact, I most likely, if looking at this business, was not the first partner to go. Other people would say there would have been another partner to go. And so I started putting him in a box, so to say, meaning like structuring that person's exit. Well, it just flipped. And I just said, this is not worth it. So I ended up negotiating against this attorney. And Roland, it was very emotional for me. I feel like they got a great deal.
Yep.
But at the same time, I got one hell of a deal because I got to create what we're creating now.
Yeah.
And so I negotiated my own way out. It was very tense in the moment because these were my friends from Foreclosures Daily.
Yeah.
These were
like 15, 20 year friends.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
You know, so more than, you know, just business partners, just friends. And so it was my first real bad breakup, so to say. And it was tricky. And so I feel like I walked away, you know, leaving money on the table, but I felt like emotionally that was the right call
right.
for me.
Okay.
There was no value in the company. So could I have fought for it? Yes, but at what emotional expense?
I agree with you 100%. Okay, so now armed with your experience and knowledge at this point,
yeah.
You decide to do WealthFit.
Yeah.
What coming into WealthFit did you say, I'm going to do this differently, or based on what I learned, this is how I want this to go?
I'm going to take some time. So a big lesson for me as of late as a, you know, go-getter, achiever, hustler, whatever, you know, fun term you want to brand it these days, I'm going to take some time. So I exited in October and I said, I'm just going to take some time off. And I spent it with my boys. It was great because it was the holiday season. And I got the itch in January, like I need to go create something. So my coach, I still had a coach.
You took 3 months off.
It ended up being six. But I started to itch around the 3 month.
I like it.
It's also the start of the year. So I'm going to blame it on that, right? New Year's resolutions. Yeah. So I remember my wife and my coach told me to make a list. And I think this is funny. Even though I had exited, I still kept a coach on to figure out like what was going to be my next thing just to kind of have a sounding board. Mm-hmm. And my wife had told me, you need to make a list of names, but I don't know if you've had this experience where like they're too close. And so like, you're like, okay, I'll do that. But it took me paying my business coach, even when I wasn't bringing in, you know, a salary from that business. He said the same thing. And so naturally, I should just pay more attention to my wife, which I'm doing now.
Well, here's what I tell my wife, because she says, you never take my advice. and I'm like, I always take your advice. It's just that I ask other people. Because you're the first person to ask.
Yeah.
Because I value your advice the most. No, but it's true.
Yeah.
And I know it's true for you too.
Yeah.
You value her advice the most.
Yeah.
You get that advice and then you bounce that. You're on a team. It's you and her against the world, right?
Yeah.
You bounce that advice off the other people that you know who validate, support, give tweaks or clarity on it. And then you act. But you're taking her advice. It's not, so that's what I had to explain to her. And she's just like, oh, well, that makes total sense, right?
That's a great
if that helps
explanation. It totally does. And you're right about that because she is my partner. And going through that exit, like she's like, you should have left 3 years ago. I've been telling you that.
Right.
I'm like, I know. I'm a guy. I'm hard-headed and I got to come do it my own way. So I made a list and I started calling my network and rolling. I was blown away at like all the cool things going on in the world. I was just so head down in my business and I got sort of like depressed. And so I didn't want to reach out to people during that time. That's what I'm doing different now is more focus on relationships, the thing that got me started. And so I reached out and I looked at all the different opportunities. I thought I'd be in the cannabis space or crypto was, you know, blockchain was, you know, hot. And I remember coming to TNC and that was kind of like, okay, I'm coming to San Diego, the mecca of a lot of stuff.
Right.
And TNC was a big inspiration for me, met a lot of people, had some conversations. And ultimately what I decided on was I was stagnant for many years of my life, not personally growing, not learning in new areas. And I said, the next opportunity, I need to be around the right people. There's got to be less pressure on the sales part of it. Because I think when you're under the gun, you can make bad decisions, right? Because you're in fear. And so I said,
And you have incomplete information because you have to make them fast, right?
Right. And I said, I got to do it. And so when WealthFit told me about it, like, hey, you know, we're in the real estate, I'm like, ah, you know, like I did the real estate info thing. I said, I would do that. And they're like, no.
So WealthFit, did it already exist?
It had already existed.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
It had already existed. It's been around for over 2 years now. Started in the real estate info online space, selling and marketing courses online. They said, no, we have a much bigger, grander vision. We're going to be in money, invest all forms of investing. We're going to talk about lifestyle topics, kind of personal development, software, and then entrepreneurship.
Nice.
Yeah. And so when I heard about that and saw the kind of what you've done with digital marketing and all the different companies, what I noticed was I had the opportunity to come here to San Diego and be in an incubator sort of environment here. And so there's a big company attached to WealthFit that I sit in on their management meetings. I get to see what 500 people in an organization with the management tactics are. And I said, man, this is a place that I can grow. I don't know if I'll do this forever is what I was thinking. I was skeptical moving all the way across. But I said, listen, if I come and put myself in this environment, I'm going to meet a ton of people. I'm in San Diego. I'm going to learn a lot. and I'll go from there. And that equated into, that evolved into a much longer term relationship.
So was there a list of what you wanted from the new business that you went into?
Yeah.
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 Can you share some of the things?
Yeah. One of them I just said, which is growth opportunity. So I wanted to learn all the things that I didn't know about being a CEO, making the transition from, I like to say, like a guru or solopreneur with a small team into like a big company. Where could I do that? And I thought, Roland, I was going to be in Silicon Valley, like the startup space, the continuity income, subscription income. I'm like, no more high ticket stuff. That's great. I want to find a place to land. I want to be in an environment where we can sell this thing in 3 to 5 years.
Yeah.
Criteria.
So exit was a big deal.
Exit was a big deal. Yeah. And maybe I wasn't going to exit with that company, but I was going to go put myself in the environment and make connections and see how a Silicon Valley or a SaaS company rolls.
Sure.
And so that was my criteria, the right people, mentorship, to see inside the business of a reoccurring and how that is run. And if I could leverage my past, this was like an if I could leverage my past relationships and bring them forward, that would be interesting to me. I almost just thought about, I want to leave that world behind and just cut it off. And I said, that's foolish. There's so many relationships and capital that I have there that with the right opportunity, if I could bring them.
Leverage what you already have.
Leverage, yeah. Right.
Yeah. How long have you been in this so far?
Over a year.
What has surprised you about this that you didn't expect?
Oh, man.
Good or bad?
Well, moving to San Diego at first was a little bit of a challenge. I come from Florida, a no income state. So just from
no income tax state.
No income tax state, sorry. So that got me. That was interesting at first. But in this business, when you're not pressured to sell, when you have reoccurring revenue that's supporting your growth, man, you can make longer term decisions. And at the Empire, it was always like, get up and be like
hustle.
The lion and, you know,
eat what you kill.
Right. And like you make not bad decisions. You just don't make great decisions.
Different decisions. Short term.
Very short term. And so having the runway that we have here, having the resources that we have access to has been awesome. And it has allowed us, man, everyone should do it this way if they can do it, but it has allowed us to really build a valuable asset.
Nice. How are you innovating in this space over what you've seen? What's different?
Well, I think the biggest differentiator is we're assembling a library of wealth creation. So if you look at a, you know, so-called competitor, a Masterclass or a Lynda or Udemy, what we're doing is assembling a wealth creation library. So we don't feel like there's one place that you can go and get wealth creation information. Another way that we're innovating is we are getting athletes and celebrities to come onto the podcast that we have and contribute to that conversation. So being pop culture based on, you know, classic direct response, you know, ROI principles, but also creating a brand at the same time. I know those aren't like every company is doing that, but we just, Roland, we feel like there's this opportunity in the market. We're going to assemble a library. It's going to be attractive to one of the big boys. And that's how we're going to win.
Do you have potential buyer targets in mind?
We do. Yeah, for sure.
Can you say who they would be?
Well, you know, one that was interesting. Number one, I shared this with the team upstairs. You told me about Spectrum Equity and some of the things. So we know that they're in the, you know, education subscription space. So
have you chatted with those guys yet?
Not yet.
I'm happy to make the intro.
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah. We also know, too, that you got to get to a certain benchmark before they really want to talk to you. But we also know start earlier.
Yeah. Surprisingly, they really want to get to know you earlier before you're there because they track you along the way.
Mm.
And it might be, you know, we can talk later about
that'd
numbers,
be great.
But I think it might not be too soon for you to talk with them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. So that could be one. Another one that popped up on our radar is universities. So there's, you know, about to be or there is disruption with the traditional go to school model, uh-huh. and they're starting to do stuff like create digital libraries. So that popped up as one, maybe kind of like an outlier, but one we hadn't considered.
Providence would be another private equity that would be good for you to talk
be
to.
Good.
I think. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. So if you're past the venture stage, a lot of people don't know the difference between venture capital and growth capital.
Yeah.
So there are growth capital companies that help you once you're not venture, you're not startup.
Yeah.
And they tend to invest in, they're ideally going to be when you're in the 20s.
Yeah.
But they still want to talk to you even when you're in the 10s.
Okay.
So that's, you know, or close to 10.
Yeah.
So that's something, you know, range-wise to think about. Okay. So on the celebrities, so you're using celebrities and influencer type people.
Yeah.
What's the strategy there? How do you choose which celebrities or influencers to approach?
Well, this is a good one. Right now, we're at the stage, Roland, of we'll take what we can get. So, a classic example is I noticed that Danica Patrick had a book out, so I reach out to her PR people. Hey, we've got a podcast. Here are the statistics we have. Here are the people that we've had on. Leveraging, we didn't have really any big name mass media pop culture people, so I leveraged what I had. Here's a list. Here's our stats. I'm going to be in New York at an event with Danica. Basically, I was buying a ticket to attend an event she was speaking at. And I said, I'd like to interview her. She says, no, I'm not the person to talk to, but this is the person you need to talk to over at GoDaddy. So reach out to her. She's like, let's get on the phone. I'm like, wow, this is going quick. So I get on the phone. And I should take a step back and say, Maria Sharapova was speaking at this event, and I'm a tennis guy, so I was so focused on Maria, because I was personally interested. And then last minute, like 3 weeks before the event, I'm like, I should reach out to Danica. Like, she's no slouch either.
Right.
So I reach out to Elle. I got her on the phone, and she's like, yes, let's do it. Fly to New York, get there, and she's like, who are you? And I was like, punch to the ego. I'm like, I'm the guy. She's like, oh, I thought we were going to do that remote. I'm like, no, I'm here now. What can we do? And so she's like, give me a minute. And so I get, she goes to the green room and she's like, I can get you 8 minutes. I'm like, of course, I'm going to take it. So I go in there and end up getting like 15 minutes with her. So that was—
Now, what did you have to be ready for that? Because that's pretty— you have your mobile pods.
I did.
We're sitting in this amazing box that you've got. Obviously, you didn't have this.
Yeah. I've got a portable. I'll show you on the way out. Yeah, we had a portable thing.
You're like, yep, I'm good to go.
Yeah, which it wasn't assembled and it was actually in the hotel, but I ran, got it, and like I'm all disheveled and like nervous and,
she's like,
and all
that. Who's the sweaty interview guy?
Exactly. But it went well. So that was an example of just reaching out and asking. If you don't ask, you don't get. Then we're leveraging some of the relationships of the partners and people around. So we just had Manti Te'o, NFL football player, come in and talk on the show. Wouldn't say celebrity, but we had, you know, Rob O'Neill, SEAL Team 6 leader, leveraging the resources around me. He was speaking at an event for our sister company. And so leveraging that. So the strategy is, Roland, to get them on, give them a platform for something timely, maybe their charity or the book they have out.
Sure.
And get them to talk about something they don't get to talk about, but maybe they want to talk about that business they're starting that no one asked them about, or how they manage money or bad investments they've made along the way.
And what's the advantage, you think, in having those people on?
To bring new people, new audience into the fold. You know, you may be following a Kardashian, or you may be following somebody else, and you're an entrepreneur and you just find them fascinating. And so when you get a chance to hear them talk about business or talk about something they normally don't talk about and bring them here to WealthFit, maybe they want to continue that education and that conversation around wealth creation and, you know, wealth preservation.
So my question was going to be, how do you reach out to them? And it sounds like you reach out opportunistically based on if they've got a book, if they're in the area, if you're going to be in the area, and then you just call them.
That's right. That's right. Different services out there from a tactical standpoint. ContactAnyCelebrity.com is just a list of all the PR agents where you can just do some outbound reach. And we're about to execute on a strategy where we're going to do a lot more asking. And gosh, if we ask 100 celebs, if you want to call, or influencers, and we get one, great. Like, we'll take that.
So is there intentionality behind that list?
Correct. Yeah. I mean, we don't want to just get any folks on, you know, because they're, you know, mainstream or celebrity, but ones that have a business or parlayed their fame. So yeah, doing that, that wants to talk about business that's relevant to the conversation.
Give me a list. I just did that with Joe Fier and Matt Wolf from Hustle and Flowchart, which is a great podcast.
Yeah.
They I said, make a list of the 100, and there were like 35 of them I could introduce them to. So if you've got, you know, I've got one. That's, to me, that's it. You make that list, but then you got to share that with everybody you know, right?
Got it. Yeah. I've been better at asking. Even when Manti came in, I said, do you know other people that could benefit from being on the show that wants to share their message? So
Fortune Builders is a partner or investor or some connection there.
Yep.
Did they have celebrities at their events?
Not celebrity, like Eric the Hip Hop Preacher. You know that name? He's, you know, in the speaking world, he's known. I mean, they had Rob O'Neill, the SEAL Team 6 leader. But
okay, so you're looking to those people already?
Yeah, they're not like, I would say, you know, Traffic Conversion. I mean, you guys have some like mass media names, and you have people that are known in the education space.
Yeah.
Fortune Builders, I don't think they've gone to that level of, you know, getting a Damon John or a Gary Vaynerchuk.
Because that, I was going to say, that is now part of our contracts when we do, when I do that to get the celebrities for there.
Yeah.
I say, and you'll do an interview
yes.
for the podcast. And
yep.
if they say, well, we'll only do the speaking, yep. then I'll say, well, then let's make the speaking an interview. And then we do a live interview for the podcast on the stage
yeah.
that fulfills the contract. So we're leveraging the payment that we made them, like that was getting Branson on, right?
Right.
We leveraged the payment that we made to get them on.
I love
then
that.
The fulfillment of the payment that they got for the event is a live interview, but we put the podcast thing up and we record that for the podcast and we negotiate the right to publish that on the podcast. You're not, you know, you got multiple birds with multiple stone, you know, with a single stone of payment. So that's definitely something to think
when I
about.
Saw you do that with Branson, I'm like, this is genius. Cause I thought he was actually just coming to speak. And then I got more details about it. And, I was like, man, this is genius.
Yeah,
this
it drives is classic a ton of downloads. Awesome. Cool. So what is next? What's the growth plan now for your chief education officer?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. What is that? And what's the,
yeah.
What is the plan going forward?
Absolutely. So we started off in the real estate category. This year we've launched into other verticals. So money, investing, lifestyle, and entrepreneurship, all forms. And so we're on a path to create a course a week
okay.
here. And our model is the talent actually comes, the trainer actually comes to the studio and films it. So it's not like another thing where you can do it from home and it's PowerPoint and, you know, video. There's a full production in it. So our goal is to expand that category. Right now we're investing and starting to see some returns on an SEO strategy. So putting out tons of articles and content and then growing the show. So again, because we have the resources, we're making longer term investments because, you know, from what I understand, Roland, content generally is a 2-year investment, like an SEO,
yeah.
before you start to see real, you know, ROI back. So we're treating the podcast the same way and making those investments to grow an organic audience. Yet at the same time, too, part of our growth is to leverage Facebook even more in paid media.
Okay. So paid media with Facebook and Insta, I'm guessing. Yep. Any mm-hmm. Google or anything like that or YouTube strategies in with that?
We'd have to ask Andy. Andy's our chief. You know, what's funny is I was been a marketing guy all my life and I right. still am. Like we use marketing every day. He's actually heading that up and I don't have like my hand in the pot there, and I'm okay with that.
I would say it's actually kind of good that you don't know that, given that that's yes. not your function. So
yeah.
what would you say the chief education officer is? Because I'm not familiar with that as a function, so it's yeah. kind of cool.
Well, I wanted a cool, trendy title, like a Silicon Valley-ish, that I'm realizing. So that is essentially, Roland, I'm a recruiter. I am the gatekeeper. So I go out and create relationships, modeling you know, as a connector out in society and figure out who are the trainers that we're going to bring to the platform. I also lead the show. And so the Get Wealth Fit show. And so interviewing cool folks like you and folks from all around the world and just putting forth the message. And the final component, which I haven't, that's the next pillar, is to go out and speak, to leverage my background and communicate the WellFit message out there via stages.
That's cool. Yeah. One thing you might want to look into is Alexandra Catani,
okay.
who's partnered with Glenn Ledwell on a mastermind for personal development called okay. Flight Club.
Yep.
She does consulting stuff, and she's helped numerologist.com using a model that has components of what you're doing.
Yeah.
But it's been, I think, a 10 or 20X growth over the last couple of years
okay.
Into the mid 8 figures.
Okay.
I would definitely chat with her. And if you remind me after the show, I'll connect you with her. But
okay.
It's really cool what they're doing to recruit and then monetize the recruitment in multiple ways.
Okay.
Really, really cool.
All right. Yeah. That'd be great.
Nice. So if folks would like to get in touch with you,
yeah.
learn more about Wealth Fit or anything else, what are all the Weberies that they should
the Weberies,
put
that.
Into the internets to get to get a hold of you.
Well, I encourage people to check out the show, the Get Well Fit show. So wherever.
Is that on a podcast?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. GetWellFit.com is just a redirect to where it lives on the site, but it's on iTunes and Spotify and all the fine places that we distribute the show.
Okay.
And then WellFit.com. We've got awesome resources there, education on really how to manage your money better, then get out of debt if you find yourself in that situation, bad debt, and then put that money to work for you, which is something I wish I had done earlier in my career versus just invested it all into a business. And so that's why I'm so passionate about what I do.
How who's the ideal person for the show? So for anybody that's listening that might be a good candidate for you, how would they know that?
Man, Roland, the challenge with doing a pod, I fall in love with everyone because everyone has a story. So I'm looking for folks that are entrepreneurs or investors with a message that they want to share. Maybe a story of a misstep. I think we learn a lot more from, you know, the mistakes that we make in life. And so I'm looking for someone that wants to, you know, come on the show, ideally in San Diego, because I always prefer them come to the studio. They can fly in for it.
Sure.
But really, if they're focused in the money form of investing, or they're an entrepreneur and they know how to create success in any of those areas, those are the types of folks that we're looking for. And athletes and celebs.
So how would they reach out to you as far as to get a hold of you as opposed to just the website?
Yeah, I think the best place, something that will prompt me to use it even more, my two favorite places. One is LinkedIn. And right. I know not everyone's there, but I really love LinkedIn for some reason. Mm-hmm. And then the second one that I actually need to use a lot more of is Instagram. So the Dustin Matthews on Instagram.
Awesome. Cool. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. Is there anything else you want to share with folks before we sign off?
The only thing I can think of is something like this. It's, you know, whatever your goal is in life, maybe grow a business, maybe it's find that love of your life, or maybe lose some weight if that's your goal. I always say this, Roland, like take one small action a day. Don't, you know, break it down, take one small action a day, because what ends up happening is you build momentum by taking one action a day, and you often find yourself there a whole lot quicker over the course of a year because you've built this momentum.
Absolutely. Awesome. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you coming on and letting me share your amazing little booth here.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome.
You've been listening to Business Lunch with Roland Frazier. If you're enjoying the show, let us know by subscribing and leaving a review. And for more information, go to businesslunchpodcast.com. Thank you for listening.